The Union, the United States, the North in the American Uncivil War had the opportunity to do something really remarkable and threw it away. As far as I have been able to ascertain, this idea never occurred to President Lincoln, nor to his military commanders, nor to anyone north of the Mason-Dixon line, for that matter, perhaps to no one at all, until right now. Right now. You say the North won the war between the states. The North won? All right. But let me tell you something might have happened. Something might have been proposed that could have assured a northern victory immediately without one shot being fired. The cost of war, any war, is considerable. The cost of the Civil War was unimaginable. More than 600,000 Americans were killed in that conflict. More Americans than died in World War I and World War II and the Korean War. More than all of those wars put together. The Civil War lasted 4 years. During the first 27 months of fighting, the South alone lost 175,000 men. A body count bigger than any living army Robert E. Lee ever commanded. A number exceeding the entire Confederate military service in July of 61. In fact, if one includes the soldiers who died from disease among those who perished by the sword, that Civil War wiped out almost 1 million men. That was the real tragedy of the Civil War. And yet a dollars and cents cost paralleled it. Consider this. The basic infantry weapon for both sides was a particular kind of rifle, a single-shot muzzle loader. Only two different manufacturers, but the parts were interchangeable. The price was fairly uniform, $14.93 each. Oh, I know it sounds cheap by today's standards, but between 1861 and 1865, 1,600,000 of those firearms were produced in the United States. That's almost $24 million right there. And the many monetary costs added up quickly. Clothing and rations, medicine and property loss. Historians figure the price tag on the war between the states. The total cost was about $10 billion. And it was pretty much evenly divided between the North and the South. More than either side could realistically have afforded to lose. Ten thousands of millions of dollars. And the issue that struck the match that lighted the fuse was slavery, right? Americans, at the best auction block prices conceivable, the South owned between $2 and $3 billion worth of slaves. That's right. Before the first shot was fired on Fort Sumter in April of 1861, the North could have taken the $5 billion that the war was about to cost them, could have purchased all of the slaves and set them free, and had at least $2 billion left over to industrialize the agriculture of the South. Civil War buffs sometimes discuss the sin of slavery and the price of freedom. Now you know why the price was so much greater than it had to be. Now that you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products, protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have two great guys here in studio with me today, Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager, Paul Sloan, who he doesn't know this yet, but he's going to be a regular on the show from now on because he is so entertaining and interesting. All right.
The snacks in the green room are amazing.
Yeah. I'll talk to Kevin about the snacks in the green room. Yeah, he probably has to leave a few bottles of something in there with them too, huh? Anyway, we're gonna wrap up our deep dive of the spaceport. I mean, to me, this is a fascinating project and really cool especially after we just saw the, you know, the moon mission and all that kind of stuff. I have a young friend who's a millennial, and he still thinks that the 1969 moon landing was a hoax, and I have to tell him no, but that's okay. And then we're going to talk about the strategic work plan implementation, and almost more, most importantly, and I'd sure like comments from the audience if you got some time to call in, how we balance economic development with North County rural sensibilities. I think this is really important. It comes up all the time on something is making noise here on Morning Exchange. So you can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. I think one of the most exciting parts of the spaceport initiative is all the educational stuff,
right,
that's going to become available to young people who are graduating high school even, but college as well. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, and that was one of the big original points of it, is how do we create pathways to jobs that so that folks can stay here on the Central Coast. And we've been, Councilmember Bausch is very familiar with the CTE program at the high school. We've been working with Superintendent Loftus as well on modernizing some aspects of the career technical programs. And so, for example, taking our excellent welding program and extending that to space micro-welding, which is what it needed for building satellites and things like that. This is in very high demand. So taking the core skills and then adapting them, working with Questa for one-year certification programs that are very targeted, industry-specific, what companies actually need and will hire you for. And then once we have the talent pipeline, we have a great place people want to live. That's what companies are looking for, is someplace that welcomes business and has people willing to work. From day one, the most common comment we've had from locals is, this is amazing. Our kids can have jobs. Our grandkids don't have to leave. And second to that is, our kids can come home. Because if your kid goes off to college, there's a good chance they're not coming back because the jobs they train for aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And if your kid stays here, the job base may not pay them enough to stay.
Well,
here.
They don't get trained for jobs in college.
So, but engineering and technical
engineering,
jobs.
Engineering, yes, yeah. but not the liberal arts.
And let's be honest, not every job requires a four-year university degree. There's a lot of education that we can mm-hmm. do right here between the high school and Cuesta College, and allows people to never have to leave home.
Absolutely.
Well, this kind of, you know, again, I talk about it with Kenny all the time, the proficiency, the low proficiency in the basic stuff. How are our high school kids and junior college kids, how are we going to bring them up to speed so they can do these more technical jobs?
I don't know that the proficiency that's being measured is necessarily applicable to these jobs that are here. Certainly the math is required, but how do you read a blueprint?
Mm-hmm.
How do you read a schematic? How do you build something with your hands? How do you micro weld something?
So
trust me, the state of California is not testing those proficiencies.
So who's going to train them to do this stuff?
Teachers.
Okay, so we'll have to bring in people that, you know, the people that can train the kids to do this stuff.
Yeah, like once upon a time we had shop classes and things like that.
Yeah.
And this is just another type of shop class that's specialized for specific industries.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, you probably saw Cal Poly got $1 million grant to set up a training facility.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be buying it specifically to buy equipment such as micro welders, you know, lasers for micro welding, things like that, so that the high school and Cuesta can extend programs to use the tools that we'll be setting up out mm-hmm. at the airport.
I think we see, without going too far afield, we have dual enrollment set up now through our CTE programs with Cuesta College. And so you take a high school teacher, you get them up to speed to teach a college level course at the high school. I see more of that coming about, but Paul's absolutely right. We have a state-of-the-art welding shop at the high school now, probably better than something that Cuesta offers. It's not micro welding, so that's going to have to be either a new shop built or repurposed, something along those lines.
Let me ask you one last question on the spaceport, and then we're going to move on. Is there any expected major or need for new infrastructure to have the spaceport developed? I mean, you know, around the airport, could have impacts on the community?
For the license, no. We're literally licensing existing infrastructure, which is basically the runway. If a business wants to come and build a building, then they will, obviously have to go through all the things you do with planning, whether it's on airport property or all around the airport. There's lots and lots of private land that mm-hmm. things can be built on. So that's the great part, is that we're connecting dots with our school system, with our local communities all up and down the coast, and our school districts, that this is literally a regional project. And if I can say one last thing, if anybody wants, since we're talking about horizontal launch, if folks listening in would like to see what that looks like, if they go on, there's a company that's a leader in the market. It's called Dawn Aerospace, D-A-W-N Aerospace. And they've been here a couple times. They spoke at a conference here in Paso last year. They're big fans of Paso and Cal Poly. And last summer, they flew a Cal Poly student project on their space plane, and they created a really cool little video. And if you go to YouTube and you can just type in Google, use search term, Dawn Aerospace Cal Poly, and the little video will come up. It's about a minute 40. And it's the head of the airline talking about working with Cal Poly. You'll see a space plane and how it flies a Cal Poly student project. And you can literally see what we're talking about that someday could happen in Paso.
These horizontal lift vehicles are mostly drones, basically.
They are drones. They're unmanned. There's plans for them to be some manned, but these are basically remotely piloted. And they're half the size of a Cessna 152.
Very small.
Very small.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Before we get into the, I'm going to let the listeners know you have a really great economic development dashboard on the path. So if you Google Paso Robles economic development dashboard, folks, you'll see what we're going to be talking about here in a minute. But before we go through that, because it's about eight screens, and I want to kind of just touch on, we have all kinds of conversation on KPRL about, managing the development so that people who lived here because they wanted a quiet, peaceful existence don't have neighbors that are making noise, whether it's agricultural neighbors making noise or airports that are making noise. So, I mean, from a planning perspective, let's start with Chris here now. I'll give you a break for a second, Paul. What do you look for when you look at a project is brought to the city council? What do you look for to know that the right kind of balance is being struck from a policy perspective on making sure that the people who have lived here for a number of years are not going to be inconvenienced by the development project?
I think for me, I'm not, the job of any city council, certainly our own, is to create, maintain, and grow economic value. That's our job one, and that comes in many different forms. Education, our tourism, whether it's airport, the spaceport, somebody who wants to have a manufacturing facility here. There are zoning laws and codes that have to be followed. We have different classifications of business licenses, and I think it's up to an entrepreneur or a business owner, an existing company wants to expand here, to explore those, see where they fit. If they're going to build a building, we'll say, they have to follow the building codes. That goes through our planning commission. The planning commission is really good. There's some great folks there that can examine and help an applicant walk through that. City council isn't really necessarily asked to weigh in on, do you approve this business moving here? I think it's our job to attract people that we might bump into at conferences, or that we meet, in a restaurant while they're visiting here, and encourage them to come here. We have so many CEO types of people that visit our wineries, for example, simply picking up a wine club shipment and talking to them about, hey, did you think about downtown? Did you think about out at the airport? There's land here. Then we come back, unfortunately, and we talk about housing. Eventually, we come back down to housing. So we really need to work on our housing.
Well, that's going to be the next topic here, because that's always, it comes up every time I talk to you or John Pichong or Heather.
Sure.
Is this term affordable housing? And on the dashboard, I can look and see that, so what do we have, 30,000 people living in Paso Robles now, approximately?
Approximately.
I mean, it looks to me like there are very few homes, new homes being built. The price is high. average cost, what did you say, it's like $750,000 now?
And going. Depending and going on which study you're looking at, I've seen the median price is as high as $950.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, as we were talking during the break, you know, you're saying it has to be high-density housing for the demand, which a lot of us don't want to see here.
I think the folks that are proposing solutions for our affordability, is what I said, are proposing high-density housing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that fits Paso Robles? I don't think the appetite for high-density housing being, you know, clustered together, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 stories tall, that would reduce the cost dramatically. But is that something that we want to see impact our skylines, our traffic, our infrastructure? Jury's still out on that.
What's driving up the cost mostly? Is it the permitting process? Is it just the cost of land, or is it just the overall being in California?
I think all of the above. I would start with land cost. Land's very expensive in California. Buying that land, getting through CEQA if that's necessary, getting through plan check. That's time consuming. The cost of mandates that the state of California puts on, whether it's solar or other kinds of infrastructure that the state has bestowed upon us, supposedly in our own best interest. I think a lot of that is going to have to be adjusted. The city just went through a review on our fees. We are not allowed to make a profit on fees that we charge. The fees that we include not only what it costs to go through plan check, but also all of the inspections that have to come during the construction process. Our fees are not, they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what they were from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they're ungodly expensive, but they're in line with what it actually costs. And we can show that what our costs are and justify those. It's just expensive.
Well, I know that I couldn't afford to build my house today that I built 30 years ago. You know, and I'm in an unincorporated San Luis Obispo County, and I just know how even the county fees have gone through the roof. I've heard the city fees are really unbelievable, you know, connecting to the sewer or water or whatever it is.
Unless you have an ADU, and then it's really, really inexpensive.
Why is that?
We're not allowed to charge extra because of the new laws coming out of California.
Okay.
We can't. There's a lot of things that the state has taken out of our hands.
Okay. And then in the meantime, we were talking again during the break, the housing developments that they've doing out on Lanay, some of those have kind of stalled in their ability to get.
Only one that I'm aware of.
Oh, yeah. What's going on with that?
Officially, what I know about it is that the developer lost their construction financing,
mm-hmm.
and they are working to secure new financing, mm-hmm. and then it'll pick back up.
All right. How do you see it from your perspective, Paul? I mean, you know, because you're looking at it slightly differently, I think, than Chris might be.
Are you talking about housing in general?
Yeah, housing and affordability and all that stuff.
Sure. Well, affordability is an interesting term because that just means if you can afford it, mm-hmm. right? And if you look at the actual affordability rates that the county puts out,
mm-hmm.
they have workforce housing and they have medium income and low income and acutely low income. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Bausch and I participate in the HCOC, which is the Housing Constraints and Opportunities Committee. And one of the things we talk about is we literally have two housing market objectives. So we have a lot of our jobs are service level jobs. And so when we look at both the wine industry and the tourism industry, they say we need apartments for our staff. They're mm-hmm. renters. And then we're building a lot of single family homes. And so what we need are jobs that pay enough for local people to buy the homes. So we need essentially apartments for the workers we have now. And we need jobs for the houses we're building, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if you know anybody who's trying to buy a house here locally, there's a lot of competition with folks moving here from outside the area. They sell a house in LA or the Bay Area. And for them, we are a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we are, our prices are high, it's the gap between the income levels, what our jobs pay, and the cost. And so there was just an article last week, the week before, where we were one of the top four most challenging counties or something like that.
I was looking at, your rental market here. I'm looking at your dashboard. The rental market looks pretty constricted as well.
Everything is constricted. Beacon Economics at their economic forecast from a couple of years ago predicted that there would be over 15,000 units short. And interesting to note, it didn't matter what type of units were built, market rate for sale homes or rental homes, all of those would help move the needle to an affordable if we built that many units.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a supply and demand. There's nothing really surprising there. If you built more houses, prices would come down. But we're seeing people stacked up in homes right now in apartments, three or four deep, families.
Yeah.
I never thought I would see that in Paso Robles.
It's really something. I'm looking at the household income numbers here, and it looks like I wasn't surprised that our household income here is a little lower than the county, but I was surprised to see that we're quite a bit lower than the state.
And
you'd think that this was would be a pretty affluent area to be able to afford to live here. I mean, what's the story there?
Retirement, I think, is a big driver of that number.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's the problem. I was looking at that number. There was a slide here, two age distribution.
Right.
There's too many old people like Chris and I.
Careful.
I'm looking at, just looking at that, I think it's the last one. You should have put that first. But basically,
Paul's trying to bury that.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the age distribution, I mean, the vast majority of people in the county, in this area, are over age 50.
We're constantly
highly experienced, I think.
Experienced, that's it. We're constantly being rated as one of the top places to retire for all the great reasons that people like living here. That's just a fact. And then so people that have the means and the time of their life, period of their life when they're looking for that, are attracted to us.
All right. Well, Paul, you're really getting good at this because you hit the mark for the break right there. It was good. Anyway, folks, we'll be back. We're going to talk about infrastructure next. And Chris has some good news on that front, I think. So we'll be talking about that and other pressing issues in the city on the other side of the break. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The Justice Department indicting former FBI Director James Comey. It's related to a previous social media post.
We're told this is related to an Instagram post from the former FBI Director last year. When he posted on the beach, you may remember there was a formation of shells that said 8647. Critics to that post immediately pointed out that 86, at least in the restaurant world, means to get rid of from a menu, 47 meaning the 47th president of the United States.
Fox's David Spunt in Washington. President Trump holding a welcoming ceremony for King Charles, Queen Camilla at the White House today. Now, the visit comes amid growing tensions between the U.S. and the U.K. over the war against Iran. America is listening to Fox News.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900 or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Paul Sloan, Economic Development Director for Paso Robles, and of course, City Councilman Chris Bosch. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. You know, so the last thing I want to ask you guys, and then we'll move into the infrastructure stuff that we want to, I know everybody's interested in, and the progress that you're making on managing the city. And we talked a couple weeks ago, and you said there, in your mind, Chris, that there are some things that you're really seeing that are positive. But I guess the overlying, aside from the fact that we're all too old in the county, right? Okay, we've identified the number one problem. There's too many people my age. The economy's pretty flat here. Tourism is flat to down. The wine industry is holding on. So this is one of the reasons why the spaceport is so darn important. You know, private, economic development is a good thing. So, I mean, you've got a tax initiative coming up from SLOCOG. So I'd be interested in both of your takes on that, if you want to take a minute on that. And then also, I mean, I believe the school, Paso Robles Schools, is looking to float a bond, aren't they? So people are, the taxes are going up, basically, or they're proposed.
They're proposed. They have to,
right.
Both of those are looking to be on the November 3rd ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get on, it'll be up to the people to decide if they want to pay more tax or not.
What are you seeing here on the SLOCOG front?
So SLOCOG is another half-cent sales tax addition that would have to get a cap to increase the amount that we could charge. We're already at that maximum, so... I think Senator John Laird would have to, he may have already introduced that legislation to increase the amount of tax. Hmm. If SLOCOG has tried and failed in the past to increase our sales tax, there are those, the opponents say that we already pay too much. The county should be using their money in a better fashion. Spend it less on another project, more on roads. SLOCOG is saying we need this money in order to compete with other cities who are applying for shovel-ready projects and getting grants from state and federal that North County, San Luis Obispo County has been not privy to. And we're talking, in some cases, billions of dollars mm-hmm. of grants in aggregate.
Hmm.
The school bond is another construction bond for, as I understand it, I'm not an expert on this by any stretch, but this time for work at the high school. Measure M is still being paid off. That was passed in 2016, and that was for elementary school and the one project, the pool at the high school. If you talk to business manager Brad Pulowski, they need this bond in order to make new classrooms and new labs, like the welding lab we just talked about, in order to build that. So there are some opportunities that could be taken advantage of with more money.
And what about the J-20 tax? That's something else that's coming
that's
up
here. I don't like taxes. I don't like sales taxes. J-20 was used for roads and our fire and safety.
Mm-hmm.
I think the results speak for themselves. We are fully staffed at 61 officers right now and support personnel for the police department. Six more at the academy. When those six are graduated, we will be fully staffed for the first time, I think, ever, or at least in a very long time. Same with the fire department. There are about four, I'm going from memory here, but we've been able to start a new fire station on Union, a new training station, which eventually will lower all of our, should lower our insurance rates within the city limits. We have a new paramedic vehicle, I call it. Instead of rolling out a large fire truck, you can roll out a four crew, and it's just a lot more efficient. Most of our calls from the fire department, going back to the elderly, are a response to the elderly.
Hmm.
I could see if the funds allowed it, purchasing another one of those vehicles just to save a lot of money. The roads, I think the biggest proof in the pudding of why a sales tax measure, we just passed a sales tax measure and we eliminated the sunset clause. I voted against it because of the sunset clause. I don't think we should borrow money against a sales tax measure. We know what that revenue stream is going to be. Why should we borrow money against that and pay half of it back in debt service mm-hmm. or interest?
Right.
To Ryan Cornell's credit, figured out a way to save money for a couple of years, working with Didis Esperanza and David LaCar and staff to design work for 2 years, save money, and now we can spend almost $15 million this year on road repair and road maintenance. That's an amazing way to use all of the money that's generated for the purpose intended instead of spending it on debt service.
Well, yeah, especially at a high interest rate environment like we're living in right now.
We have some of the best staff that are very creative.
Mm-hmm. Even then there's me.
Yeah, you know, you have to include Paul in that too. I think with our new city manager, Chris Hewitt and his assistant, David Malowitz, our staff is probably the most excited that I've seen in a very long time. They're very positive. I think to Mr. Hewitt's credit, he pushes responsibility down as far as it'll go and then says, do it. Here's the objective. Make it happen. And people are very, very resourceful in making good things happen. We look at some of the parks. The Parks and Recs are doing our Veterans Park, and over next to Sherwood, using recycled, repurposed material, not costing us money to do something, but making the city a better place. Our new arts
and culture,
arts and culture committee. We'll be staffing that, taking interviews for applicants who want to serve on that. Great idea that came out of Parks and Recreation. We will continue to grow and be a positive force in North County with the staff that we have under Chris Hewitt's leadership. It's a fun time to be in Paso. I'm a volunteer. I'm not an employee. But it's just fun to watch the other employees do their thing and enjoy it and have a good time doing it.
Well, that's good news.
Very good news.
That's good news. Well, last question on taxes. Does it make it harder for you to plan economic development in a rising tax environment? Or is it just, or how do you, or is there a secret to it?
Well, we put together our 5-year economic development strategic plan, which is where you peel the onion down into 5 initiatives and 75 action items. And then we have the strategic plan that Councilmember Bausch has in his hand here. So when you tear it down into bite-sized pieces, it's not necessarily tied to that. There's some things you can do that are more elbow grease oriented, mm-hmm. and then some that just require money. And so you just have to see how you can work with what you've got. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, we're saved to the break. We're scrappy here in Paso. If you run into a roadblock, you go over, around, or under it, and that's just how it is.
All right, cool.
So, well said.
So let's talk about the strategic work plan. Tell the audience, if they don't know about it, what this is all about, and what the process, just real quickly, what's the process, and then what are the highlights or the highlights, lowlights?
Highlight. I don't think there are any lowlights. Highlights, back in November, Chris Hewitt brought to us, City Manager Chris Hewitt brought to us, Jacob Green and Associates, our consulting firm, and tried to help us focus on what our goals for city council would be. Why is that important? We're coming up on a new budget cycle. We have to have a new budget in order to align the money, Paul mm-hmm. just mentioned, to the goals. We have to first identify what those goals are. There's a limited amount of money. We can't spend money on everything. You mm-hmm. have to be strategic. So the 6 goals that were identified: facilities, transportation, and infrastructure. 2, public safety. 3, housing and homelessness. 4, cultural, recreational, and open spaces. Number 5, community and economic development. And number 6, efficient and effective governance. So by using number 6, efficient and effective governance, we can come back and decide how we should spend this money. We've had a couple of workshops now. I have on my calendar, I believe this is the correct date. It might change, but May 6th is the next tentative date to get together and talk about this. And then staff will take back all the input that we have from council and the citizens, and we will come up with a budget. They will come up with a budget and present it back to council, and council will vote on that budget.
And I mean, are you foreseeing having a balanced budget? I mean, I guess you have to have a balanced budget, but I mean, are you going to be, you know, where is the budget going to be, do you think, from a...
I think, Wayne and Paul, if you like, but Paso is in a very enviable spot right now in the amount of balance reserves and enterprise funds that we have. We live within our means. We have some expenses that are very, very typical of most small municipalities. But overall, from a business standpoint, I'm pleased with how our budget, and again, coming back to Ryan Cornell, how he makes sure he and his staff do a great job of keeping us on track and living within our means.
So one of the things that always, and again, we talked about it during the break, so I'll bring it up here now. You know, whenever I see the homelessness
sure
lumped in with affordable housing, that to me is a discrepancy. Homelessness should be a public safety issue and dealt with differently. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I think the way homelessness unhoused is dealt with here in Paso, it is through public safety by and large with our CAT teams. We have 3 CAT teams now that work on a daily basis with the homeless, especially down in the riverbed.
What does CAT stand for again?
The
Community Action
Team.
Oh, okay.
And so we've had 2 that have been doing this for about 12 years, and then 2 more recent folks. So I think it's, we don't have the final numbers yet from the point in time count back in January. That's coming hopefully soon in May. The early projection is that we have less homeless now than we had 2 years ago. Going down into the riverbed, as part of the point in time count, going down into the riverbed, it is just far cleaner than it was 2 years ago. Hmm. And credit to our homeless service manager, Ashley Hernandez, for getting the resources together and cleaning up the riverbed. We have to decide, you know, there are some in the community that believe that the city should be providing housing. I don't think the city provides housing from a public sector, from an unhoused sector, or from a market rate or rental. We have a separate entity, Paso Robles Housing Authority, that takes care of that. To the extent that we can be involved, that's it. Hmm. But we should not be really... The state of California might change that perspective. The state might force us to provide housing. Mm-hmm. There's some legislation that may change that.
How are you seeing the state budget cutbacks impacting Paso Robles?
I don't think the state budget impacts us as much as it impacts the county. We're fairly insulated from that. Ryan did a great job not too long ago of updating some of that. Catherine Piatti, his assistant, helps us understand where some of those numbers are. I think if we continue to be careful with as we can project what revenue we're going to get from property tax, sales tax, and whatnot, live within those means, I think we'll be in good shape.
All right. Okay.
I think California is going to be struggling to the extent that California has to cut back on services. and grants that could impact us in the future. So we have to be very careful.
Well, I mean, you know, looks like they're going to get this billionaire tax
on the ballot.
And that, you know, again, that's another problem for California.
Especially if you're Paul.
I know.
It's been nice knowing you. It's time to move on.
Back to Tahiti, huh? Yeah. Back to Tahiti. So in the last few minutes we have left in this segment, Paul, are there any economic development things that we haven't touched on that you'd like to highlight that are going on here in Paso Robles? Initiatives that you want to get done that you know you're starting to work on? I mean, anything I haven't touched on?
No, obviously Spaceport is the shiny object everyone likes to talk about. But here, as you see in the strategic work plan and the 5-year economic development strategic plan, there's lots and lots of actions that we're working on, mm-hmm. Which includes our project working with Capslo on child care providers, because that frees up workforce,
okay.
Which is something that because we want to support our existing industries, which is wine and tourism. They're going through what they're going through, but we mm-hmm. need to support them. They're very important parts of our economy. We did an economic impact study on tourism, for example. Tourism today literally pays 37% of the city's general fund. 1 out of 5 jobs in the city is supported by tourism. And if we didn't have tourism in Paso Robles, every household would have to pay on average about $1,800 more per year in taxes to have the same level of city services we have today.
So, or we'd have to cut way back. We don't want to cut.
And so that's just literally what's paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea, and the tourism is based largely on the wine industry. So we do what we can to support them. And when we had focus groups, they talked about, they need obviously rental housing, mm-hmm. which we've talked about, but also child care, because that frees up workforce. So that's a big part that we do. And then we get to work on fun things like, and what can we do to help on the city side to make things to support what you're doing? That's where we get into placemaking and beautification efforts. Downtown lighting, for example. When I first got here, one of the priorities was the park is a big, dark, scary place. And now it's an attraction unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was something you ran through between your car and a restaurant. Now it's families come down there in the evenings. It's fantastic. And that's just year-round. Of course, the holidays, it's even more so. I'm working with the new Commission on Arts and Culture, because that's what we can do on downtown beautification. Alley beautification, making us a more walkable downtown. That supports local businesses. Part of what I do is I liaise, as does the council member, with Main Street and Travel Paso and the Chamber and the Wine Alliance,
mm-hmm.
To see how we can support the private sector. I really enjoy that part of it, is seeing. My job is literally a bridge between the private and the public sector. So there's a lot of really exciting things going on, having the dialogue. Paso is just awesome. There's so many people here that are engaged. And I was just at an event over the weekend, people who just moved here and immediately jumped in with both hands and both feet. They said, this is a great town where you can just get involved very quickly. And everyone wants to see Paso succeed.
Chris, yeah.
Can I segue off that real quick?
Yeah.
So we have our volunteer opportunities coming up, and the applications close this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Need to get your applications in now.
What, applications for what? I'm sorry.
Arts and Culture Board, okay. That we talked about. There's 5 openings for that. Library Board of Trustees. I think there's 2 openings. Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee. Our Senior Citizen Advisory Committee. And our Youth Commission. Can't stress enough, if you've got kids or grandkids out there in high school especially, looking for a good job, especially to help on their college resume, and they do an amazing job of updating stuff to do for our teens. But those are good. Are you going to talk about 4th of July?
No, you can.
Okay. Don't fight over it.
All right. And then if you're looking for something a little more monetary, it's easier to write a check. We need sponsors for our 4th of July celebration. 250th anniversary, the state's going to tag in with their celebration. But if you can help us out with a sponsorship on the 4th of July, Barney Schwartz would be most appreciated.
What's planned, or what's hoped to be planned for
right
that?
Now, we've ordered the fireworks.
All right.
That's about all I can say at the moment. So amazing fireworks show.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. All right, well, when we get back, we're going to wrap it up with some questions on the upcoming election. Not going to get too political. But
the primary, right?
The primary.
Okay.
All right. And anything else you guys want to talk about. So, folks, stand by. We'll be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks falling due to troubles at OpenAI after the Wall Street Journal reported that the ChatGPT parent missed internal revenue and user targets. Shares of AI chip companies like NVIDIA, Broadcom, and AMD fell, while Oracle, OpenAI's largest cloud provider, also tumbled. Meanwhile, oil prices continue to climb, with U.S. crude hovering at around $100 a barrel. The Fed kicking off its two-day policy meeting today with a decision on interest rates Wednesday afternoon. Tech was the worst performing sector. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly lower on Wednesday. Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Meta are slated to report earnings. The Dow winners, United Health Group, Travelers, and IBM. The Dow decliners, Sherwin-Williams, Caterpillar, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow falling 26 points. The Nasdaq lower by 223. S&P 500 down 35. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest-growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company, Incorporated. Member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I am Central Coast Attorney Dave Derringer, and I believe in faith, family, and freedom. Without faith and family, there is no freedom. So the mission of my law firm, Protective Law Corporation in Morro Bay, is to help families grow family power by transmitting life, fortune, and honor to descendants. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all trusts are not created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain alienable rights, that among these are powers to defer, avoid, or shift taxation, to shelter assets from creditors, that to secure these rights, trusts are created by me. If you are serious about asset protection and family protection, call me, Dave Derringer of Protective Law Corp in Morro Bay. Dial 805-225-5105. Or just click on my phone number at lawnews.tv. Again, lawnews.tv. LAWNEWS.TV.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. Our last segment with Paso Robles City Councilman Chris Bosch and Economic Development Director of Paso Robles, Paul Sloan. You still have time to call in with questions or comments. 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I'm bringing back Megan Barth from the California Globe. She's the executive editor. We had some technical issues last week. She couldn't call in, and she's just covering some really great stories between Eric Swalwell and all the fraud, Medicaid fraud that's going on. Gee, I didn't ask you if we're having any of those problems here yet, but that could be in a whole other show. And then we're going to have Paul's counterpart down in Atascadero, Lorelei Capel, is going to be joining us. She is the Economic Development Manager at Atascadero. And so we're going to see what Atascadero is up to. I think there's some friendly competition going on between Paso and Atascadero. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, she'll introduce herself as being from Atascamazing.
Ah.
So I always remind her we're Paso-tastic.
Okay.
And, no, she's awesome. Lorelei is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to having her on.
There's no competition, just to be honest. Paso's got it hands down.
There you go.
the big guy speaks. All right. On all those opportunities to get on boards or make a contribution, how do people find that information out?
I think the best contact name is Wyatt Lund. I'm going to hand his phone number out over the 805-635-1200, 635-1200, or prcity.com.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you guys wanted to talk about one more thing before I asked you anything else.
Coffee with the City.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Coming up 7:30 Thursday.
Okay.
This Thursday. great opportunity to meet with your city leaders, city staff. It's held at Cal Coast Brewery in their patina room.
Okay.
And it's usually packed, so get there early. There's coffee. Sometimes they have donuts if Paul and I aren't there before everybody else. You might have some left. But it's a great opportunity.
What time is that?
7:30 a.m.
In the morning, huh?
In the
you
morning.
Guys get up that early?
Well, we're there.
Okay.
Of course we get up that early.
It's right next to Cal Coast, so it's really convenient.
All right. So, you know, I don't want to talk politics too much here, and but Chris, I mean, as we move into the primaries,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you think our listeners should be paying attention to that could make a difference in our lives here in California?
I think people need to be very cognizant of what a dire position California has placed itself. Without getting too political, we have to be really careful of who we send to office, what they're going to vote for. We are not going to be broke. We are broke. And that's a big impact, mostly on our schools.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know why we have a school bond coming up? Is because the school has to shift spending on infrastructure. They have to spend more money on salaries, and that makes it very difficult. So just read, get out and vote. Don't sit home this time, get out and vote.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't, unfortunately, again, this is a problem. We have low propensity voters.
Yes.
In this state, in this area in particular. And those are the ones that usually call and complain the most.
Get involved. If you're not sure and you think you can do a better job, you know, figure out how to run. If you're not sure how to run, contact one of us. We can help you figure that out.
Yep.
But make sure you vote.
All right. Anything else on you on your radar that you want to touch bases
I'm
on?
I'm sure there is. I'll think of it as soon as I
walk out the door,
we're,
huh?
We're good. Thank you, Barry.
All
Thanks
right.
for having us.
Well, we got a few more minutes left. So what about you, Paul? I mean, have we... hit all your hot buttons here today?
Some of the highlights, for sure. There's always more to talk about. I just like to let folks know that I'm really easy to get a hold of. So I work in City Hall, so feel free to swing by. Otherwise, shoot me an email at psloan, P-S-L-O-A-N, at prcity.com. And since we're giving out Wyatt's home phone, I'll give up my cell phone. My cell phone is 805-635-5299. And happy to talk, converse by email, we can grab a coffee, support our downtown businesses, and talk about ideas, questions, whatever they have.
So you guys, what do you, I mean, again, I know you're working closely with the Chamber and with the Wine Alliance, but what do you do to do you do coffees with citizens and just get their
yeah,
input
all the
on
time.
Stuff?
Anytime. We can just meet together, grab a coffee, do whatever you want. Sometimes you have questions. I'm meeting with someone this week who has a business idea.
Mm-hmm.
I love startups and small, you know, I work with all size businesses. You know, my background is that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, this is my idea. How do I get started? I just mm-hmm. love that. And then there's just so much they have to do, you know, and there's a lot to take in. So just brainstorming on how they can get their idea off the ground. So I'm meeting with someone this week that. So anyone that has those kinds of ideas, just I love reaching out and having people talk to me if they have questions about what we're doing at the city. I love talking about those things as well.
Well, it's really heartening to me that we actually, both of you guys are serial entrepreneurs,
sure.
you know, and that you guys are really, you know, you're outside the box as far as what a lot of people who are in public office and or work for the city, a city or a county, you're really, you know, you're looking at it differently than the way it's always been done.
Sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes that's a curse.
Well, it makes you a target, right?
It makes you a target.
Yeah.
So it does. If I can give out my phone number
sure.
as well. 805-610-0350. 610-0350. Call me anytime.
Thank you both for being here today and taking this much time. I really appreciate it. And folks, I'll see you next week with Megan Barth from the California Globe and Lorelei Capel, Atascadero Economic Development Manager. You have a great week. Thanks so much.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.